Drive Time on RTE Radio 1. Sponsored by Zurich. For pensions, protection, savings and investments. At Zurich, we deal in peace of mind.
Drive Time on RTE Radio 1 with Sarah McInerney and Cormac O'Hara.
Well, Rachel from Cork says, you sound mad in Dublin. Getting excited about garden sheds as a solution to the housing crisis. It shows how awful the housing situation in Greater Dublin area is. That garden builds seem like a positive step. Well, it's not just in Dublin, as we're about to hear, because as we've been hearing firstly today, planning rules on cabins and modular homes in back gardens could be relaxed. This is part of renewed efforts by government to solve the housing crisis. And we're going to talk now to Emma O'Hagan, who lives in a log cabin in Leitrim with her partner, and they decided to make the investment in what they describe as their tiny home. Emma, you're very welcome to the programme this afternoon. Can you talk me through it then? How did you become a log cabin owner? Why did you go in that direction?
Well, I suppose there's a number of different reasons. I suppose a lot of people ask me that question. And part of the reason was kind of a needs must. It was also, I suppose, a choice of ours as well in terms of how we want to live our lives. We had been travelling through Europe for almost 2 years on and off and living in our camper van at the time. So that was quite a small space for us to be living in. And so we realised how little, I suppose, that we needed. But then I suppose there was some challenges that we encountered then when we returned back to home, given the fact that we hadn't worked or lived in Ireland in over 2 years. It wasn't really an option for us to kind of take on a mortgage at that point, for various reasons, but also, you know, we weren't exactly sure whether we would want to stay in Ireland long term. The rental situation, as we all know, there's not many available houses, particularly around Leitrim, for rent. So there are a number of reasons, and we knew it was something that we would most likely be okay with living in a small space, given the fact that we had just lived in a small camper van around Europe. So,
okay, yeah, so you decided to invest. Firstly, can you tell me, where did you put it?
So we are currently on a small plot of land. It's actually just a corner of a family member's field. So small little, like less than an acre, just a corner of land that's still being used for agricultural purposes.
Okay, so no problems there with neighbours. I know that's a big problem or a concern for a lot of people.
Yeah, well, that was kind of our first step, actually. Before we did anything, we approached the neighbours and we kind of explained our situation to them, explained our ideas, our thoughts. The initial place where we were going to put the tiny home is not actually where it ended up being. Haven't spoke to neighbours, and I suppose that was the most important factor for us, that it was depending on how the neighbours received it. And we've been very lucky with our neighbours. And so long as we can keep that in relationship up, I think that's the most important thing.
All right, so that was your first step. Then in terms of what you went for, how much did it cost?
So all in, we had some groundworks to do, and we're fully off grid, which means that we're producing our own electricity and water. But we're coming in, I think the last time we kind of tallied it up, it was around under 30,000. Haven't done check in the last like 6 months or so. We've had a few expenses since then, but in and around 30,000.
And what exactly are you getting for that? When you say a log cabin, how big is the space?
It's pretty small. It's 25 square metres. It's under 25 square metres, just short of 25 square metres. It's 2.7 wide and I think it's 7 metres long. Not a huge amount of space. I suppose what most of the money was spent on was our off-grid setup, you know, getting our own solar panels, producing our own energy, that sort of thing. So there's a lot of, it might sound like a lot of money, but when you break it down, we don't have any bills or mortgage, I suppose, is all paid for now.
Oh, well, that's one way of looking at it. So explain to me the off-grid a little bit better then. How is that all working?
Yeah, so all of the energy that we produce is coming from the sun that we haven't seen in 10 days, mind you. But we do have a backup of a generator. So throughout the winter time, we do use the generator to produce a little bit of electricity in the morning, and that powers up the batteries that we have as well. So that was a good chunk of the money, I suppose. Then we also harvest the rainwater. So luckily enough, there's plenty of rain. So we're collecting all the rainwater. That's then filtered through. We we have three filters, and then we also have a UV light as well that it goes through. That's for like our drinking water, our showers. And then we use gas in the wintertime to heat up our water, but then we use the solar panel to heat up our water in the summertime. So we kind of can change between them both, and we use gas then to cook.
And is that a choice, Emma, or could you have hooked up to the grid and for water and electricity?
Yeah, look, it probably would have been possible to hook up to the grid. I suppose where the cabin is situated is quite remote, let's say. So it was going to cost, I think we got a quote at the time, and it was going to be at least $6,000 to get the power as far as where the cabin is. So I suppose when we kind of weighed that up against the price of panels and going off grid, it kind of was a no-brainer for us at the time to go off grid.
Because indeed, I have, I think, some of your bills here, and in June, July and August, you spent nothing on electricity, €5 on gas, I think €5 on waste disposal, is it? And so that was a total of €10 for those 3 months. And September to January, now for people who are getting the bills in, their winter electricity bills from September to January, €40 on electricity, €5 on gas, €5 on waste disposal, and €48 on heating and a diesel heater. So it was €100, I think, is per month. Is that right?
That sounds about right. Yeah, they were more expensive months. Yeah.
Okay. Well, of course, they are for everybody.
Probably,
but can I ask you finally, we've mentioned the space a couple of times, like what you're describing there, 25 square metres, much smaller even than a one bed apartment. Is it sustainable, do you think, for you, say, into the future, or for people? I've seen a lot of people discussing about downsizing for people, you know, who might want to give the house to their kids and they'd move into the cabin in the back garden. Is that realistic, do you think, that size space?
Look, I think this size is a stepping stone in the direction towards maybe something a small bit bigger. I definitely think we've lost the run of ourselves in terms of our size of houses around Ireland, and heating up a 5-bedroom home when there's two people living in it, I just think is, you know, it's bizarre. So I definitely think we do need to strip it back. Now, we've obviously stripped it back to the max. Like, I don't think you would go any smaller than this comfortably. We're young, we're comfortable with our sort of sleeping arrangements. It's up on a loft bed, which would not be, let's say, for everybody. You know, we're climbing up a ladder, let's say, to get to bed. So I think a small bit bigger than this would be the ideal solution. 25 square meters, it's so doable. I suppose we lived in a studio apartment, and it was roughly this this size, so it was pretty small. I would say that we had a little bit more head space, let's say, for the sleeping arrangements, but there are studio apartments that are probably the same size, or if you're looking at students that are living in for 4 years in college, you know, they're in small spaces. I think it's a stepping stone. It's maybe not a permanent solution for somebody, but for us it was an opportunity for us to kind of get ourselves on our feet and start saving for something maybe a little bit more long term.
Well, it's very interesting to get an insight into how it all works for you, Emma, and thank you so much for joining us. That is Emma O'Hagan there, who lives in a log cabin in Leitrim, talking about her experience. We will be returning to that subject after 5 o'clock. Now, as you heard there in the news headlines, planning rules on cabins and modular homes in back gardens could be relaxed as part of government efforts to tackle the housing crisis. The measure is being examined by Minister of State John Cummins in line with recent changes to planning laws. As it stands, extensions of up to 40 square metres to a home can be built without planning permission. Well, to discuss all of this now, we're joined by builder and co-founder of Common Knowledge, Harrison Gardner, and Social Democrat TD, Rory Hearn. And you're both very welcome to the programme. And Harrison, I might come to yourself first. I suppose, firstly, what do you think of what the government's planning to do here?
I think it's great news. I think it provides a lot of opportunities for different scenarios, whether it is kids who are still living at home but don't have that independence or privacy, or whether it's parents whose kids have moved out and they're living in a house that's far too big for them and could downsize to something like 40 square meters in their back garden and potentially rent out the front. I think the opportunity that it's giving us is a short-term solution for a lot of the people who are struggling right now, who are trying to find ways to create more livable or more comfortable living situations. And I think there's a lot of opportunity in what's being proposed, as long as it's paired with kind of hard lines drawn about whether these structures can be used for Airbnbs and ways for enforcing that, because that could be the real failure of this if it just encourages more short-term letting in the city.
Yeah, I know the minister speaking to Claire Byrne earlier said that he saw this as not as a rental issue, but something that would be intergenerational for people to be living with each other, I suppose, different members of a family. But that's not, there wasn't a clear cut commitment, I suppose, that it couldn't be rented at this point. So we'll have to see how that goes. And I know lots of people will be getting in touch on 51551 about that as well. Harrison, you run courses which teach people the skills to actually build their own homes like cabins. So, I mean, can you explain to me then how that would work? And we'll say a 2-bed log cabin with 1 bath, how much would that cost and how complicated would that be to build?
Sure. And, you know, it wouldn't be a log cabin. I know that's kind of the first thing we jump to, but there's a lot of ways to build a small structure like that, a small home, quickly and with kind of new sustainable materials. And it would be a timber frame structure. It could be on ground screw foundations instead of deep concrete foundations. You know, there's a lot of options to have a low impact, to build a sustainable building and to build it cheaply. Building out the back of your house in the city can be very, very difficult because for a lot of people, they don't have access. All the material is going to have to come through their front door. So being able to build with something like timber is going to be a huge asset to people looking at this. So we run courses down at Common Knowledge, and this whole year we've been designing and building a cabin called the Common Cabin, which was built around the 25 square meter exemption that everyone was allowed to build to before. We're going to have to upgrade that to a 40 square meter extension now. But I think what the opportunity is and this upgrade from a 25 square meter to a 40 square meter is that you could have a real home for two people in 40 square meters. You could fit a small bathroom, a small kitchen, and a living sleeping space. Whereas the 25 square meters before, it wasn't possible to do that. It wasn't legal to do that unless you had planning permission for it. There were lots of barriers around the shape and size that it was before. But we've been running the Common Cabin course on Build School now for the last year, and it's been amazing. And we'll be running it for the rest of this year as well.
Okay. And just before I go to Roy Hearn, in terms of the cost, what would be your expectation for people if they wanted to self-build, as you teach, to build a log cabin in their, a timber frame cabin? I'm not sure what the difference is between a log cabin and a timber frame cabin.
Sure, you should come to Build School. We'll tell you all about
I would have so much to learn. Go on.
Look, I think you can build something, a 40 square meter extension using timber frame and kind of modern sustainable techniques for around 50,000 to 60,000 in your backyard.
Okay, Rory Hearn, does that not sound good in the middle of a housing crisis?
Yeah, thanks, Sarah. It does. And I think that the reaction from the public today is indicative of the depth of the housing crisis. I don't think it's a coincidental either that this idea was flown on a day when we were bringing a motion to the Dáil, which was putting forward really structural changes and solutions to the housing crisis. We also heard today that the government's affordable homes in O'Devany Gardens for a 2-bedroom apartment will be €400,000. I think this idea that somehow sheds in the back gardens are going to be a solution for generation locked out is holding up something that really won't come true in practice for a lot of people, because there is clearly, as Harrison has outlined there, there is, you know, clearly room, and we need modular type housing, timber frame housing. We need new ways of delivering and building housing. And we need to provide new ways of delivering more housing. The idea of just sheds in the back is really problematic for a number of reasons on a basis of giving planning exemptions. And I think
what are those reasons? What are the problems?
Yeah, so just to say, first of all, though, that, you know, if you go for planning permission, you can erect a cabin or a shed type or a modular home in your back garden. So it's not that it's illegal currently. You can do it. The issue is that the size in terms of the exemption, the issues are things like, for example, are people going to be put into these homes? Are they then, for example, going to be deemed deemed housed? Will they be taken off the social housing waiting list? Will they be, and as the minister didn't make clear earlier, rented out? Are we going to see a proliferation of sheds in the back being rented out by landlords or Airbnb, as Harrison mentioned? There are real issues around access to things like, you know, electricity, water, infrastructure, fire safety concerns. And again, I don't want to be pouring cold water on a what is clearly, you know, a lot of people who are really in a difficult situation.
Some of those issues that you've raised, are they going to be deemed housed? If the government said they're not going to be deemed housed, these won't be counted officially as part of the housing figures. And if they said these can't be rented out. Now, neither of those, I give you, have been clarified. But if the government said no to renting out and no to including these in the housing figures, then would you support it?
Well, I think we do have to, and say, like, I do think we have to look at our planning system and to see how it can facilitate homes, smaller homes like these in back gardens. But I don't think we should go down the road of exemptions from planning permission. We need to ensure that what is being built is of a standard that is livable. My real concern is that we're really saying to generation locked out, generation stuck at home, what you should be aiming for is a shed out the back rather than actually a home of your own. This is really, to a certain extent, getting the government off the hook from their failure to deliver, as we've seen today, real affordable housing on a scale that will provide people's homes. Okay. Because the question is, for example, is this suitable for families? And of course, the issue is in rural areas where you have more space, I think there's more potential for this. In back gardens, are we talking about, you know, families living, you know, two or three families on a site? That, you know, how is the, in terms of, you know, is there going to be issues of overcrowding? Is there going to be in a small, you know, 40 square meter unit, you know, two parents, two kids? You know, what is the situation?
I suppose, Rory, is the problem not that that family that you're describing there, maybe grandparents, then the kids, the adult children, and then their children as well, are at the moment living together in one house because they've nowhere to go? They're living in the box room, they're sleeping on the couch, they're the uncounted homeless figures. Is this not better than that? It's not perfect, but is it not better than that?
Well, as I said, I do think we have to look at this. I do. I'm not saying that this is, you know, completely wrong as a concept or an idea, but I think we need to be very, very careful about changing planning regulations and what we think we might be solving something, but actually we won't really. And there are people already.
Let me bring Harrison back in on that. And it's an interesting point about the planning permission, Harrison. Would you have concerns if this is exempted from planning permission that you could see all sorts of structures going up?
Yeah, I suppose. And just to say, I agree with everything Rory's saying there. You know, there's lots of ways that this could go wrong, but I'm an opportunist, you know. And so when a door gets opened like this, it's an opportunity for a lot of people to improve their situation right now. But it is a small piece to a much bigger puzzle. And this shouldn't be seen as the solution by any means. But I think it is a really good step in the right direction of helping people right now, today, who might be able to change this or do something about it.
And can you explain to me... Go on, sorry, you had another point. Go on.
Sorry. As for the type of buildings that are going to go up, it is a concern, and there is a danger when you don't have to ask for permission that buildings can be built the wrong way. And that's exactly why we started Common Knowledge, was to teach people how buildings actually work, how to build them safely, how to build them to code, how to do it the right way for just everyday people. You don't have to be a builder to come to Common Knowledge. It's for everyone who's not a builder.
And I want to ask you about that in a second. Just some of the text coming into 51551 on the point of that Rory was making. One person says there will be all kinds of yokes put in back gardens. It'll be like Lagos, a city full of hovels. Another person says log cabins are a great idea. Bye-bye, mother-in-law. that comes from Dan in Cork. And we don't have Dan's second name. Lucky for him. I wanted to ask you, Harrison, in relation to the cost, because I think you said 60,000 for one of these 40 square metre timber frame homes. If they can be delivered for that, why are they not being delivered for that by the government? If those homes can be delivered for 60,000 euro, I know they're small, but why aren't they all over the place?
That's not a question for me. That's a question for someone in government. I'm here teaching people how to do it themselves, and I think that's why we can do it so cheaply. When I say 60,000 euros, that's when you build it yourself.
Okay, so there's no builder involved. Okay.
You come to Common Knowledge, you learn the skills, you buy the materials, you put it up yourself. that's a 60,000 euro.
Right. 40 we had lots of questions in it earlier that you might be able to help us with in terms of sewage and wastewater. Mick in Tullamore was asking about that. Other people asking, do you need a septic tank? How does all that work?
You would hook it into your main system as long as your sewage and your septic is sized to accommodate for that extra bedroom that you're adding on, basically. But for most places, if you're plumbing into the mains, that's no problem. You can connect to the current system that's there. If you're plumbing into an existing system, you just need to make sure that system is sized correctly to be able to accommodate another bedroom being added on. But it's no different from being able to add that 40 square meter extension to your existing house. You may still be adding an extra bedroom or an extra bathroom into that 40 square meter, even when it's attached to the house. So okay. It's no big change from that.
Roy Hearn, I might bring you back in terms of other objections that we've been getting in from listeners about how close it might be to the neighbours. Will it be against an adjoining wall? Will there be an expectation that it will be soundproofed? Would you expect all those issues to be dealt with?
They would have to be. And just to say, Sarah, that it's already a reality that there are thousands of people, we don't know how many, living in sheds in back gardens already. Mm. And that's something that's not been spoken about. And what we need to know is exactly how many. And I was trying to find the figures today in relation to how many, for example, planning permissions were granted to people to put up what we might call log cabin type structures in the back gardens. But I wasn't able to get it. I would ask the Minister for Housing to provide such figures. Because again, we need to have an evidence-based approach to our housing policies and not just throwing ideas off the top of our head. And I would just say that, you know, this is the first new idea that the government has come up with. We haven't seen the other ideas we've seen in terms of addressing the crisis are the tax breaks for developers and investors and raising the rents. And it seems
to me they're not saying raising the rents. They're saying get rid of the rent
potentially,
zones,
potentially yeah, removing okay. the rent caps. And it just seems to me it's not. Of course, this is potential. But it's not structurally serious, like it's not fundamentally going to change our housing system. And again, you know, the real question of are these homes for families? Are these the homes that, you know, our younger generation saying this is what your aspiration is to live in a shed in the back garden? And again, that's not to say it's not possible. But really, the questions we should be asking are where are the homes that we need, the affordable yeah. homes that are going to be built? Well, and if this is done, as I said, I think it needs to be kept within the planning system. We can't have just
a
free for all.
Sorry, if it's kept within the planning system, though, does that not, again, increase the cost and slow everything down? We know that that's already the cause of lots of things not happening, backlogs in the planning system.
Well, absolutely. There's a huge problem with backlogs in the planning system, but that's the lack of resourcing that's going into the planning system. And it is a question back to government. If you want to solve the housing crisis, why aren't you putting more resources into the planning system, having
but the
more
whole point
planners?
Here because, is that because you could can build develop an extension under the current rules, Rory Hearn, as far as I understand, of up to 40 square metres without having to go for planning. And the idea is that this would effectively be an extension that's separate to the house and it would come in under those same rules.
Yeah, and I think that's very problematic for the reasons that I outlined. That if you exempt this from planning, you have potentially, you know, types of dwellings that we don't know, are they safe? Are people living in them on a permanent basis? Okay. Are they going to be rented out by landlords? Are they going to be Airbnbs? You know, sheds in the back in an unregulated form, it has got serious potential downsides.
Okay, so more text on this. Build a three-bed timber frame. Built a three-bed timber frame at the back of my parents for them for 70,000 euro is the best decision ever. Real savings, comfort and security for my parents. And it's not a shed, says that person. Another person says, what would happen to all these log cabins when the occupants do move on to another property, which is presumably the idea for most. Another person says, yes to new ideas, but it's a sad day when 40 square metres is seen as a big solution to an ever-growing national crisis. The bar just keeps getting lower. Let's keep perspective on what constitutes decent, modern, affordable housing. That comes from Rory. But on the flip side of that, and this is a final question to yourself, Rory Hearn, one person is saying the government should never have banned bedsits. It's now coming back to haunt them. Bedsits were great. I lived in one in London and now it's okay to live in a shed. What do you think of that? Because it keeps coming up again and again. Was that a mistake to ban bedsits, which was an affordable type of property, maybe not that awfully nice to live in, but served a purpose for people at a certain time in their lives?
I think that when you look back at what was done in terms of the changing of the regulations, people were living in you know, situations that were intolerable in terms of space and size. So I think it was the right decision. The problem was they never built affordable housing of one bedroom apartments, smaller units. That all that has been built since has been either really expensive investor fund apartments or semi-Ds, you know, the traditional home. And so there is a big issue that we don't have smaller affordable homes available for people, particularly single people, smaller families. So that is the issue that hasn't been addressed.
Thank you both so much for joining us this evening. That is Rory Hearn and Harrison Gardner. You can keep your texts coming to 51551.